time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. So good to have you with us. It is July 11th, 2022. So good to have you here, and we're broadcasting from very hot Texas. It's going to be 108 here today. So joining me on this podcast is all the regulars, but we got Jack Nunnery. Jack, so good to have you here, my co-host. Appreciate you, friend. But anyway, so good to have you with us. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. When I mean anywhere, we're making sure we're alive on every available podcast channel available. Now, for whatever reason, the vast majority of our downloads come as a result of Apple Podcasts, subscribers on Apple Podcasts. Some are still subscribed to the Blog Talk Radio. So here's what I'm asking everybody. You're going to be talking about this at the beginning of each program. Be sure to check how you are listening and subscribing to this podcast. I encourage you to listen, if you have an iPhone, subscribe to the podcast via the Apple Podcast app and search for Lickin' On Lending. That's the most effective way. So that have you here however you listen to it. If you're on an Android device, we are not showing up at the Google Play Store yet, but we will be shortly, as well as all the others. I just checked before we got on the podcast. We're on dozens of various podcasts. So if you put in Lickin' On Lending podcast, you can get to our website. You can get listen to us a host of different ways. The good news is now we're only showing up once. We were showing up at least three times. So we're there just once, thanks to our friends at Podicize, who we're now working with. And I got to tell you, Tom Hazard and his wife, who own that company, do an amazing job. Their services are over the top. So shout out to Tom Hazard and the team at Podicize for all they've done to just help advance our game. In today's hot topic, we've got Brent Immler, the director of sales at Lender Toolkit, and Mike Witzbeck, a CEO of Blueprint. It's very interesting, some of the things that are available out there. So Blueprint approaches automated underwriting. So that is a really good hot topic segment. Most of everyone's listening on a downloaded basis. That'll be the next podcast after this one when you go to the Apple iTunes store and download the Apple podcast. It'll be the second podcast right after this one. So if you're listening live, you can get it all right now if you want to, but most people are listening on a downloaded basis. So anyway, Brent and Michael did a great job. We pre-recorded it last week. I think you're going to be very pleased with the content of that podcast. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Finastra, Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution, does a great job with the robust features that help you connect with user-defined groups for processors, underwriters, and they got the open API, very solid, as well as FormFree, has completed over $3 trillion in loan verifications that help lenders lower operating costs. And we're all looking for a way to go about lowering operating costs. So FormFree, also Lender Toolkit, which is on our today's podcast. SnapDocs does a great, phenomenal job working backward from a future where every closing is a flawless experience. We're getting more and more flawless with the advent of technology, but there's still a lot of errors that need to be eradicated, and SnapDocs does a great job. And then my absolutely favorite CRM in the world is Total Expert. Glad to have them as a customer and a client and an advertiser. They have a built-in customer journeys that give lenders a starting place for nurturing campaigns. Check them out, as well as Simple Nexus. Got to tell you, we had Shane Wester on along with Arnia, and they did a great job. That was on June 27th, so listen to that. Also, our regulars, sponsors are the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, and Modex, and the Mortgage Advisory Tools, as well as DW Consulting, Debbie Wemus, and all she does is helping you with your LinkedIn connection. Finally, I want to say a special thank you to Adam of the MBA, Les Parker, Matt with the Market Update, Alice, Alan, and Jack. And we're excited about today's podcast, so enjoy it. Let's start off with the MBA Mortgage Minute with Adam DeSantis.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA submitted recommendations to the GSEs to improve their appraiser guidance for high-quality manufactured housing. Adjustments to the GSE's appraiser guidance would promote the use of site-built homes as comparable sales when appropriate, thereby addressing one of the primary constraints to further investment in high-quality manufactured housing. Also last week, MBA issued a white paper examining how climate change is dramatically reshaping lenders' and policymakers' approaches to the U.S. real estate market. The paper titled, Who Owns Climate Risk in the U.S. Real Estate Market, notes that the physical, economic, and social changes associated with a changing climate will directly affect the $50 trillion single-family residential real estate market and $25 trillion commercial real estate market. You can view the full report by visiting the news and research page at mba.org. Now that's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job. We get so much feedback when we get interactivity from everybody on our regulars. Jack, your thoughts on what the MBA is doing on the MBA report? Love to get your feedback.
Well, I'm glad they are focusing on manufactured homes. That is one clear pathway to addressing the affordability issue. We keep seeing the prices of new stick-built homes go higher and higher. And with a high interest rate climate that we're in, it really makes that not affordable to a large segment of our population. And so I've been waiting to see how the GSEs were going to address the affordability issue, especially in low to moderate income borrowers and first time home buyers. And clearly they have targeted manufactured housing as a key component of that. So the LLPAs on manufactured homes are being reduced across the industry now. David, it wasn't just a couple years ago that so many investors, so many aggregators did not accept manufactured homes. And to see that opening back up again, I think that's a real positive sign that there is a workable solution to affordability out in the market.
Good feedback. I don't know if anyone saw this. I'll send this to Nikki and have her put this in the show notes for today, but it says it's a YouTube video. It's Happening is the title of it. Elon Musk's $10,000 house finally hitting the market. And a $10,000 house. And then, so go to our show notes. I'll just tease it with that. Go and click on this link and listen to and watch this video of where Tesla is going with modular housing and taking it to another level that is actually quite exciting, especially if you start looking at the short-term rental market, the STR market, when you look at the extra units that people are building in their homes, in the backyards of their homes, so they can get some rental income. A lot of different things going on in the market, and this YouTube video is fascinating on how that fits into it. And you may be amazed when it comes to tiny houses. This isn't like anything you've ever seen. And how it comes is it's shipped to you on the back of a truck, and this it folds out and it's all there. So be sure to check out the YouTube video. You have to come to our website, Lickin' on Lending podcast, to get that link. Let's get over to Les Parker's comment on the market and the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les.
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bears just a step away. Bulls just a breath away. Losing the bulls today. Jay is just a man, not superhuman. Some would say bulls from the hate. In the mid-80s, the Volcker-led Fed fought inflation, leading to a secular bull market. Mortgage rates were above 14% and fell to under 3%. Since November 2021, rates have risen from 3% to 6%. The secular bull market is not over, but since the near misses, 2022 is a serious attempt. To end it, the 10-year yield needs to close above 3.5% and attack 4%, while staying above 1.25%. Through these volatile times, mortgage bankers need hero leaders. Loans need a hero. These views are my own. Be a hero at tmspotlight.com. A hero's gonna save us just in time.
Oh, yeah. So is that happening? We just got that macro view of the market. Be sure to sign up for Les Parker's TM Spotlight newsletter. You can get it daily. He works so hard at this, guys. You got to get it. It's excellent. Some of the leaders in the industry read it. You can get it for free, the paid version for free, by putting in the word power for power sellers. So check it out. Matt Graham, let's get over to you and get your update on the markets. And then let's get into a discussion about what is going on in these markets. My friend, what you got?
All right. Hey, Dave. So last week, holiday shortened week, and we're coming off the previous week with some pretty strong gains in the bond market. All of that sort of hard charging down from the last Fed announcement when everyone was freaked out about CPI and the Fed reassessing its rate hike pace, doing the 75 bip hike thing. And so the beginning of last week marked the floor of the range for yields or mortgage rates, if you want to look at them, at least for now. And data really led the bounce back, and maybe to some extent technicals led the bounce back. I wouldn't want listeners to assume that technicals are going to dictate any range if the economic data isn't supporting that. So in this case, they just sort of coincided quite nicely, not if you love rates going lower in perpetuity, but as far as explaining market movement, they coincided nicely. PMIs, purchasing managers indices, are like more timely versions of GDP, if you will. And they were pretty much stronger than expected throughout Europe, most European countries, and in the Eurozone. And that helped push rates higher. And then the PMI from ISM, which is the biggest deal here in the U.S. This is the non-manufacturing version, by the way, led yields higher on Wednesday, or it was part of a move higher in yields on Wednesday. And that momentum continued through the end of the week, with the jobs report coming in stronger than expected on Friday. And it all in all just helps to reset the range, to reinforce a floor in 10-year yield somewhere in the low to mid 2.7s. And that took us up and over 3% by the end of the week. In fact, all the way to 3.10. And now coming to this week, we're potentially carving out a little bit of a ceiling there. Feels a little bit early, a little bit optimistic from my own personal level of risk aversion, but it will depend in large part on the 10-year Treasury auction, and even more so on Wednesday's CPI data, Consumer Price Index, the big inflation report, the one that really rocked the market back in June. Mm-hmm. And if it can come in lower than expected, it makes a strong case, even stronger, because I think the case has already been made, that the highest rates of the year are behind us. And really, it's just the ball is in the court of inflation data to argue against that. If inflation data doesn't raise any serious objections, high rates are in for the year, and we're just sort of defining the range based on how that data plays out. There are a couple other looks at inflation after CPI this week. We have producer prices on Thursday, and then consumer inflation expectations as a part of the consumer sentiment report. And the Fed has mentioned that they do indeed look at that and care about that, even though it doesn't seem like they should, but they do. And those will just flesh out the bigger picture. But in general, yes, it's the Fed sort of trying to thread the needle between pushing the economy into recession and getting inflation under control. And there's still a chance they can do that. And we're all just sort of waiting to see how well they can do that.
It's a mystery. And I listened to some of Jerome Powell's comments here, and fascinating. What's your take on some of his comments? I mean, should we be getting confidence from Powell's remarks, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, there's a tendency among really anybody that is hoping to see their words in the news media to sort of overdo it in terms of the emotional reaction to what the Fed does. And I think they're a lot more logical and predictable than some of the commentary would suggest. The big thing to understand about Powell is that he is more transparent right now than they ever have been at the Fed. Yeah. And that's unsettling for some people. And for others, it gives them the impression that the Fed is waffling or that they don't know what they're doing. Now, they've admitted they didn't know what they were doing with inflation post-pandemic. And that is part of the reason that things have been so volatile in 2022. I think that's a good thing, because in the past, you would just have the Fed not knowing exactly what it was doing, and only have the other side of the argument where market commentators were saying the Fed doesn't know what they're doing. Now the Fed is out there saying, yeah, we didn't know what we were doing, and here's how we're adjusting. Kind of an experiment, and you guys are along for the ride. We're going to do the best we can. Let's see how this ends up.
I think you're hitting on a point. It's all been experimental. We've all known that. How can anyone believe that if the Fed hasn't been doing it when they spoke in a place of confidence? So, Matt, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that's a good thing. They seem pretty upfront about it, and I don't think they're ever intentionally misleading us about what they think is going to happen. I don't think they're making their forecasts with some secret knowledge where what they would tell their friends behind closed doors is any different than the forecast they're making. They're human beings. Their outlook is subject to error, sometimes significant error. Post-pandemic economy and monetary policy environment has been challenging, to say the least. The Ukraine war was grossly unexpected and had a huge distortion impact on the inflation outlook. And so had that not happened, we don't know exactly how stupid the Fed would have looked or how much they would have had to eat their own words. It's one of those things you can't go back in time and see what the economy would look like without doing QE, right, in post the financial crisis. Same thing here. You can't really know how dumb the Fed would have looked if the Ukraine war hadn't happened. But they are doing the right thing now. They were doing the wrong thing in 2021. They definitely overheated the housing market unnecessarily and were way too aggressive on MBS. We all talked about it at the time. And I think they've realized that, hey, you don't want housing prices to go up 20% year over year. And that's one of the reasons they've been so callous and cruel to the MBS side of their portfolio. But we'll look back on that and say, yes, that hurt a lot at the time, but it was necessary. And it helped things from getting to an even crazier place with even bigger consequences, hopefully.
Well, David, I look at all of this and I just say to myself, what a bizarre world we live in. A healthy jobs report, which we've seen, basically belies a tight labor market. And, and in a tight labor market, what do we get? We get wage spiral increases. And in my mind, that only adds to the challenge or the complexity of bringing inflation back down, or at least it elongates that process of chipping away at inflation. And Matt was so spot on with his comments about Powell and the transparency. And those people are out in the market basically looking for headline clicks. And so you've got a very interesting scenario taking place. I mean, I think Powell's actually doing a relatively okay job. I mean, I'll wait until the CPI print on Wednesday to confirm that, but I get a sense that Powell's doing an okay job in a very confusing market with the Ukraine, Russia, global impacts across both the European community and the United States' economic systems. There's just so many people out there that want to generate clicks on headlines, and they're putting out headlines that really maybe don't align very tightly to what we're seeing. I kind of look at it right now and I say to myself, there's three things that I'm looking at. Number one, I'm looking at the recession outlook. Obviously, we posted negative GDP in Q1 and it was revised a tenth of a percent down. GDP forecast for Q2 right now, they've actually improved. It was negative 1.9%. And the latest estimate out of the Atlanta Fed GDP Now forecast comes in at 1.2%. There'll be another update on that on Friday, July 15th, by the way. It's kind of interesting that in the mortgage business, I kind of see the recession as a clear pathway to lower interest rates, right? And so it's not that I'm rooting for the recession, David, but I clearly see a recession as something that could take our rates back down. Matt, my comment was really one pathway to lower rates is a recession. And then I don't want to say that I'm rooting for a recession, but as the market optics kind of focuses on whether or not we're going to enter in a recession here in the near term or longer out, what is the outlook for rates, assuming that we do see a recession here in the near term?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I have a really interesting, potentially frustrating answer. A recession is actually not necessarily a path to lower rates right now in the same way it has been. And it's more recent comments. If you see all of them, then the consensus emerges that the Fed doesn't care if we're in a recession. If inflation continues at its current pace, they will continue to tighten policy regardless of what's happening in the economy. The jobs market would have to get catastrophically bad before they would reconsider that stance. And obviously, we're nowhere close to that right now. Their two main focuses are labor markets and price stability, obviously. And they're so committed to price stability. Their thesis is this, is that no matter how bad it gets in the short term, even if it's recessionary, it's not nearly as bad as it would be if they don't step in and do everything they can to get prices under control. I tend to agree with them on that fact, and I tend to think of it, as I said earlier, with respect to 20% year-over-year home price increases. No one wants that. That's not sustainable. It's not good for anybody ever. Sure, it's maybe good for people in the short term that are flipping homes or investing at the start of the pandemic and now are sitting on more equity, but they would be remiss in their duties if they didn't do exactly what they're doing with respect to that thesis. And I hope we don't see them have to make that choice, but if they do, they're going to err on the side of keeping policy tight, even if it means a deeper recession. Incidentally, I don't think that that necessarily needs to happen, but everybody's really guessing at this point when it comes to what inflation is going to do.
So true. Excellent. Jack, any final thoughts?
Well, really kind of another thought / question for Matt. One of the other things that I've noticed that's going on in all the economic data, the euro, the dollar seems to be strong. I mean, I look at the euro to the dollar now, and they're basically at parity. Does the volatility in the euro create any movement or any interest in treasury options here in the States from folks over in Europe?
Yeah, I think that FX is always going to play into bond trading considerations to some extent. And I think that the market is generally betting on Europe needing to get tighter in the future. But while they remain sort of puzzlingly loose with monetary policy at the same time that the Fed is being overtly tight with monetary policy, it's very good for the dollar. And if the dollar declines, it's actually not great for some inflation implications due to oil prices and dollar denominated oil prices and things like that, because a strong dollar buys a little bit more oil at these levels than it would at weaker levels. And so that's something to consider. And those considerations are a little bit outside my comfort zone to comment on authoritatively, but I can say that I do think that it plays into trading considerations both at home and abroad.
David, the dollar is at its strongest point in 20 years now.
I know, isn't that encouraging? That has all kinds of implications, which we almost need to do a whole separate podcast on to get into that. That is very good point, Jack. Really good point. Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. And by the way, sign up for the awesome service of MBS Live by going to mbslive.net and put in the code LOL to get a free sign up. Alice, here you are. Alice Alvey, CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. Save that fast so you can get everything in.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate that. So for today, folks, I just want to quickly point out HUD's mortgagee letter that was issued on July 7th. In it is some guidance on some income changes that are going to be classified as COVID-related economic events. And so it's a long mortgagee letter. And the way some of the advertising out there was framing it, I thought, oh, this sounds like it's filled with good news on we don't have to hold it against our borrowers if the COVID period of time impacted their income. That's not the case. So here's how this mortgagee letter shapes up. It's long because they've plugged in every section of income throughout the 4,000 that if the borrower's income is stable, if it has not varied, so if their hours are not fluctuating, then you must use the current rate of pay. So for a borrower who's working 40 hours a week right now, that's great. You can go with it. You don't have to worry about the fact that maybe within your two-year window, their income was much lower due to COVID. So that's the good news part of it. The other side is that they've added that you do need to compare the average if a borrower's income is variable. So if their hours are varying or they're on commission or overtime, you do need to look at what's their current average since the COVID period and what is the average over the last 2 years since you're using the lesser of the two. So at first glance in the ML, I thought, oh, this is great. Maybe this is all the way back to the 80s where when the auto industry had a meltdown, we just went, oh, everybody's got a bankruptcy on their credit report. That's okay. We can do it, which we did with FHA.
We did.
It's not like that. Okay. What was old is going to stay old. It's not going to become new again. But so for here, it is a slight advantage, I think, in the way that they phrased it for some of our borrowers who do not have variable income and or on a consistent salary right now. It is technically that they're putting this out for comment for a period of 30 days for any edits that people feel are necessary. So if you think things need clarifying, please let the Mortgage Bankers Association know, because the FHA subcommittee is very good at reaching out to HUD and being involved in this type of thing. But wanted to give everybody a heads up there with the mortgagee letter 2209. This is effective September 5th, 2022 for case numbers ordered on that date. So check it out. Usually something that folks start looking at wanting to identified borrowers today that might fit with the new guidelines. And then last but not least, Dave, area median income limits are up effective July 18th. So check those out. In most counties, I think there was only one or two that either stayed the same or went down. And that's a small number for all the counties across the country. So check out AMI income limits. It's been the biggest jump this year than we've ever seen. From a national level, it went up 12%. So I'm not sure what will happen in each county, but the national numbers are very promising. So check it out. That may open up the door for more borrowers in your area. That's the report for today, Dave. Back
Good
to
job.
You.
Very good. Thank you. Let's get to Alan Pollock, who's here, dialed in from Florida. Alan, I was just down there. I shot a PBS special on Friday with John Maynell of Mortgage Data. It was so much fun being there with you. But, it's humid down there. Dang.
That's why Nike, Adidas, and all that make those new athletic shirts. And you just get used to it after a while. Right?
Yeah.
You sweat, it dries, you sweat again, and it's all good.
Anyway, good to have you on. What do you got for the tech update, friend?
All right. Good to be here. A couple of cool things going on. One is I hope to see everyone at the secondary CMBA conference coming up. I think, what is it, the 24th it starts?
Yeah.
So I will be there. So if anybody wants to get together, please let me know. And then, David, I want to talk with everything going on and right, all the layoffs and people trying to save money and where do we put money. Let's talk about a high-tech, no-cost solution. And it's called the taco collector. So it's the best invention I've seen, right, without using technology. And the only reason I bring it up is to prove you don't always need technology to accomplish amazing things. So let's talk about the taco collector, right? It's basically a gigantic funnel the size of a plate that you eat your taco on top of. And underneath that funnel, you place another taco in the taco holder. And then as you eat your taco, it falls out. That's right. It immediately goes into the new taco. But here's the best part. You now have the ability to eat in complete happiness and with complete freedom and overall satisfaction. The new taco will be filled with a blend of ingredients that you would be very hard to blend because you just make a mess on your own.
Yeah.
And if you want to have an unlimited taco party, you just, every time you take that taco from the bottom and move it to the top, just add a couple things to it, and you basically have an unlimited source of tacos.
That's hilarious.
You know what? I would tell anyone that asked me, what do I do with my technology and my team right now? It's test, 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 and test. And I'll get to that in a second. So let's talk about a couple things, David. First, I want to ask the question, is it still mortgage tech? Is it still digital mortgage? Or is it just called digital lending? I don't have the answer, but if anybody wants to let us know, feel free to message David or I. I'd love to hear your comments. So, David, good friends of everyone's, right? I think they're probably some of the popular folks in the crowd. A company called Mortgage Coach and another company called Sales Boomerang.
Yes,
yeah.
I love these.
So they have merged their companies. They've appointed a new CEO to the companies, and they're off to the races. A company called LLR Partners made the investment in each of them back in January. So they got this nice family of companies, and Sales Boomerang and Mortgage Coach are already integrated, and they're already great friends, and they have a lot of very common customers. So it made perfect sense. I'm sure from the LL Partner side, but also from the two organizations. Keep in mind, LL Partners, they made an investment, and I think it was eOriginal, $26.5 million. They did. So think about all of the strategic alignment and partnership of organizations. And now is the time to invest in technology, whether you're a technology vendor or you're a lender. Now is the time, and you need to test. I'll get back to that in a second. The other thing, David, I wanted to just mention is if you haven't been following Mortgage Coach in the community they have on Facebook, I talk about it all the time. I follow them. There's a couple thousand people in there. They're now talking about seller buydowns. Right. And they've got actual mortgage originators that are talking about how they're working with real estate professionals to help provide visualization and promotion of seller buy down. It is such a big thing right now going on. In addition to that, because I'm on the mortgage tech side and I work with a lot of lenders, everybody's looking for buy down products. They want them added. They're testing and validating them. So if you're not part of that Mortgage Coach community, I suggest you go sign up. There's a wealth of information about how other people are selling. And by the way, whether you use their technology or not, it's always good to hear how other people are doing the same thing, right? So go check it out. And it's also great technology.
Before you move off that point, shout out to our good friend, Dave Savage, and the whole group. It's just an amazing group. It's as entertaining as it is profitable to do business with them. So that's a great shout out for them.
Absolutely. And don't forget our friends at Experience are part of that whole kind of integrated with technology and great stuff going on there as well. Let's talk about Guaranteed Rate, right? They just launched an end-to-end digital fixed rate HELOC experience, another popular product that's out right now. And a couple of people have asked me over the last couple of weeks, what am I seeing? What am I hearing? Right. And really what Jack and Matt talk about is I love to hear it, but I could never repeat that to anyone because it's a little bit over my head. But I'll tell you this, non-QM tools and processes, underwriting automation, and with all the layoffs going on and the people available, people are hiring VAs and testers. Why are they doing that? Because they're looking at underwriting automation. They're looking at non-QM tools. They're looking at new processes. They're looking at ways to verify what they have, right? How do we make sure D1C is working? How do we make sure that our LOS is efficient or we're using it efficiently? How do we know that the things we reported, the bugs we reported to our vendors 6 months ago, have they been resolved? Have we even gone back over your roadmap? Do you verify what needs to be done? And just because you completed something, does it align with the release notes? Do you have those testers? Now's a good time to pick up some people, contract-based even. Get some testers in-house. Get some folks that know mortgage to help you look at your process and refine it. And I leave you with that. Technology is extremely important because we're still moving forward as an industry. There are great people out there for hire, and there's great tech solutions. This is just a temporary time, a gray matter in space that we're within right now, and it's not going to last a long time. That's my non-official, non-financial opinion, but technology must continue to innovate forward. The taco guy did it. You now can have unlimited tacos. We can do it in mortgage.
The taco funnel. That is hilarious. Now, that would be something that Jack Nunnery would have come up with. Jack?
I love the concept of a taco collector. I mean, at least a half a taco residual on your plate.
It's hilarious, but it does come up with some innovation. I mean, there's always these new opportunities that are out there.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, that's a great job. I'd like to get both of your thoughts on the continued consolidation of technology in the space. We're seeing that. You brought it up, Alex Kutcherson, Dave Savage of Sales Boomerang, and the Mortgage Coach. What's your thoughts on the continued consolidation? Any thoughts?
Absolutely. I'll go first, but I'd love to hear Jack's opinion. So here's my thought, David. It costs a lot of money to build technology, and with regulation and with everything you have to do to help someone get the return on investment and move forward, right? That's the point of technology. You don't buy an electric car to not save money or to just sit in your garage, right? You're buying these things for a reason, maybe a bad analogy. But where I'm going is it costs a lot of money to be a vendor and to put people on staff to sell a product, and you need to integrate product. And sometimes if you can create and innovate a great product or a great process and you partner with the right people, it's just a double value add on both sides. So I think we're going to see maybe not a consolidation, but a strategic alignment. Folks that maybe don't have enough cash, but have great product and ideas, or folks that can invest in the future innovation, but they have a lot of customers and great technology, or just smart people that maybe should have been together from the very beginning. That's my quick opinion, but Jack, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Jack?
Well, you know, Alan, sometimes I struggle with this, right? And I go back to the two different philosophies with technology. Is it better to have a single vendor solution, Alan, or is it better to have best of breed? And I always used to joke and talk about best of breed like the Bride of Frankenstein, right? We're just stitching together disparate body parts. We shock it with electricity, and hopefully it gets up off the table, right? And you mentioned regulation, both at an independent mortgage bank or a financial institution. The best of breed philosophy just increases the number of vendors that you've got to manage or oversee in your counterparty risk management program. Whereas if you go down the pathway of single source vendor fulfillment, you have fewer vendors. The technology hopefully works better in an environment because it's built by that single source vendor to play nicely with other solutions within that vendor. So if I'm sitting out in the marketplace right now as a vendor and I've got a cool product, but it's kind of one-off, I'm looking to become part of an overall solution as opposed to a standalone, nice to have, and I got to sell that nice to have in this market. What do you think about that, Alan?
I got to say, Jack, thank you for bringing that question up because that's an ongoing conversation that many companies have strategically. And there's a lot of risk with an all-in-one or a consolidated solution, but the cost of having a best of breed has its own weight, right? And I don't think there's a perfect answer for that. I'll give you an example why I say that. If you're a lender that has spent many years and investment in your own origination platform, your own technology, and you're not going to put that to the side, and you're not acquiring a company that may already have something in place, then a best of breed solution is the path you've probably chosen. You may find a certain vendor that has vendor services, but you've already paved your way. If you're starting out fresh, the question then, Jack, on the other side of the fence is, do you have the right core technology to let you either one, have some or a solution that has everything, or to pick and choose the best of breed? It doesn't always have to be an all or nothing, but it's a great conversation to have. And I bet you if you weighed out, it's similar to the build versus buy in a way, you probably could find some pros and cons. And I think it's based on the type of organization that you are and what your plans are for the future.
Well, this question's been on the table for 15 years, so we know there's no definitive answer to the question because we're still asking that same question today, or it's still a relevant question today. So, I mean, if there was a solution that was clear and obvious, the market would have adopted that many, many years ago. And still today, David, we struggle with single source solution or a best of breed, or like I said, right, a Frankenstein solution.
A great point. What I want to do is just say thank you to all of you that are listening, especially we've got a good friend of mine, Tom Hughes. He's a competitor, but he's a friendly competitor I have in the consulting business out there. Tom Hughes, good to know that you're listening in. Thanks for your comments on it. So, folks, it's good to have you here. That wraps up the first half of our podcast. Again, if you're listening live, just stay right here. We're going to go on into the topic that we recorded. But if you're listening on a downloaded basis, the hot topic we're about ready to listen to live is going to be available to you in the next hot topic. Folks, I'm excited to have Brent Emler and Michael Whitbeck joining us today. And we've got some exciting developments happening in the way of saving costs, improving efficiencies, and I'm excited to get started on it. Brent Emler, good to have you here, friend.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure.
Many people know who you are. He's a director of sales at Lender Toolkit. Very excited to have him here joining us. And tell us a little bit about your guest, our co-guest here today, Michael Whitbeck.
You know, David, I met Michael last year and then met him in person for the first time at Experience 2022 down in Las Vegas. I've always been just incredibly impressed with not just Michael's knowledge of underwriting, and I think you'll see that sort of play itself out in the interview today, but his passion for underwriting. It's such an important part of our industry, and his understanding of technology and being able to leverage it against his mortgage underwriting knowledge to deliver really great solutions. And we're very excited to be working alongside Blueprint and delivering really terrific solutions for the industry. So it's going to be a great discussion today, David.
Very good. I'm excited. Michael, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you here as a first-time guest. Honor.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I've been around the industry a few years myself, and I've heard quite a few of your podcasts, and I probably met you guys randomly throughout there, the different trade shows, but I appreciate the time on the show today.
Well, I remember seeing you. I don't think we had a chance to visit when we were at Lender Toolkit's event in Las Vegas that just preceded the Experience Conference, LMA's. And so it's so good to see you out there, not only on the racetrack, but also here. But I also found in our earlier call when we were first talking that we have a couple other things. We both are DE underwriters and have a strong underwriting background, but you are a pilot. And I love the fact that we have that in common as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you're going to know as an underwriter that there's a lot of similarities. I always joke around like, hey, look, underwriting, there's no school for underwriting, right? You can't go to college and get an underwriting degree, but you can get some good background. I always say, look, if they can teach this old dog to fly an airplane and not kill myself, I can teach people how to underwrite and not blow up loans, right? If you follow a system and a process and get the education and the mentoring you need, you're going to be just fine.
That's so good. Michael, tell us a little bit about your background, other than you're a pilot and you're an underwriter, a little bit of your journey to where you're at today.
Yes, I live just outside Detroit, Michigan, a little suburb called Novi, and graduated high school. Wasn't really ready for college. Frankly, I just didn't want to do any more school. joined the Army, actually tried to fly back then. After a couple of years and a few combat patches, I got out, and a friend of mine in the Army said, I have a job where I shoot artillery and blow things up. Doesn't really apply to the civilian world very well. And he said, you should get in the mortgage business. So came back up here when I was like 23. Back to Michigan, stationed at the 82nd Airborne in North Carolina. And I came back this way, married with a child in tow, got a job at a little company called Rock Financial, which is turned into Quicken Loans, which is going back to Rock Financial. And that started my mortgage career. I was a loan officer for a couple of years. It just wasn't a good fit for my personality. I'll be honest with you, I just had a little bit of fear of no's, and I just couldn't get over it the first couple of years as a young guy. So I switched to ops, which I had a lot better just acumen for. Got my first job in underwriting in 98 with a company called PMI Mortgage Insurance Company.
Wow. Yeah. They're one of our first sponsors of the podcast. PMI goes way, way back, and they are literally our first sponsor, I believe, that we had on the podcast. They reached out to me and said, we love your podcast. Could we be a sponsor? I go, yeah. So I have an affinity for them, and there's so many great people. Yeah, Ralph Armenta and so many of the folks there. Just really, really good.
Yeah. Like a teaching system. That's why I really appreciate something I picked up and still continue this day is they didn't just throw you in the pit. They were like, hey, here's how you do things. Take a class, take a test. They were always educating. It was a fantastic start to my underwriting career.
Yeah, it was a great company. Still some great people in the industry like yourself. But let's talk about, as a 20-year underwriter, what is your definition of a verified approval? We're talking a lot about pre-approvals, but what is a verified approval and how is it different than a pre-qual?
Yeah, this is kind of a marketing thing, right? When you're a consumer, it sounds the same on your side of the fence, you know, pre-qual, verified approval. But as an underwriter, look, I advocate more to let an underwriter or ops person that is educated in the guidelines and the rules and knows the calculations, let them take a look at the borrower before we put them out there shopping with a pre-qual letter. I can tell you the political damage you do to your company by passing out bad pre-qual letters. Yeah. You're not going to make up for it. You can't outdo a bad reputation. And so if you can, at all possible, I lean toward verified approvals, not like pre-quals. You know, using systems like Lender Toolkit or Blueprint, which is a systematic way of calculating income. And that's the difference. Instead of just putting your thumb in the air and saying, oh yeah, I think you make $5,000 a month and you said you have a car payment, good to go, go buy that $300,000 house. Let's do a little more research. Let's make sure that people are walking around with our letter. Realtors and other people in the area don't start seeing our name on that letterhead and turn it down flat out. And that's by verifying some more information instead of just kind of taking the borrower's word for it.
Yeah, and that gets into an opportunity and tell us a little bit about Blueprint. You have a company, Blueprint. Tell us a little bit about that and how this fits.
Yeah. So the reason we named the company that is, hey, if you go get a house built, I'm not going to go out there and plumb up your drywall and put plumbing in or anything like that. But we can draw a sketch and, you know, people can fill it in and do the work. You say what you want, we design it. So Blueprint's why we named the company that. We're working on educating and building tools. So the thing that we're most known for is Income Expert. It's like TurboTax for the mortgage industry. We took a complicated thing, which is 36 kinds of incomes are actually listed in the guidelines. And that doesn't even include things like lottery winnings. What do you do if somebody wins the lottery? There's no guideline about that, but there's things you can do to qualify it. But we took that, we built a software program that uses the same kind of method as TurboTax. Ask you some questions, you feed it some data, it will calculate the income. It doesn't just average things and give you 16 choices. It will actually do all the things that, David, you and I know what to do. Trending analysis, checking for a history, validating you got liquidity on those K-1s. It does all those steps that an underwriter does. And then at the end, it prints out how much did your borrower make and gives you the supporting documentation. Just like TurboTax says, here's what you owe the IRS or what you're getting back, and here's all supporting documentation. So we do that in a very clear, easy to read fashion. We do 40, 50,000 loans per month on average. It's a little slower right now in the industry, but we're still up in the tens of thousands per month. And we've been in business almost 10 years. We have large national lenders. We have one of the agencies that uses us, and we have loan officers and brokers and all kinds and auditing companies. So it's a very diverse tool that's easy to use for anybody from a starting loan officer to an experienced process and underwriter.
That's good. Hey, Brent, good to have you on the podcast. I love what you and Brett have built there at Lending Toolkit. What a dynamic duel the two of you are. I just love it. So be sure to say hi to Brett for me. We got to get him back on the podcast as well. Brett, as a sales leader who has navigated some market environments like these, challenging as they are, what kind of edge do you see that a verified approval is giving sales teams today?
Really good question, David. When any market cools for salespeople, we really, as sales leaders, we have to be mindful of the sales team confidence. The top producers, they know what to do, especially the ones that have been through it. They buckle down, they find their angles, they work their database, they hone their processes. But it's those middle and lower producers, they're at a risk of confidence crisis, frankly. They begin to lose trust in their ability, and it kind of becomes this cascading effect, right? Where the lack of volume, the lack of opportunity, the lack of confidence creates this cascading effect of negative implication. But the good news is there's something we can do about it, right? And this is what we're really seeing from the lenders that we work with and the surveys that we've put out into the market. Reimagining your underwriting workflow and being able to confidently and quickly deliver lending decisions, that gives loan officers a real legitimate edge, and it reinvigorates that sales confidence.
Yeah.
The only other thing I'd say on that, David, is if you do adopt any of the technology to provide that edge, don't assume the sales teams will know exactly what to do with it. We really invite sales leaders to script it out for them. What are you going to do? What are you going to say to realtors? You've got this edge. You've got this new functionality, this new tool. What are you going to say to realtors? How are you going to pitch that?
Yeah. You look at some of the biggest lenders out there in the market. I'm thinking of Better. I'm thinking of Rocket. You know, Michael's old employer, Quicken, became Rocket, as everyone knows, are using the term verified approval, Brent. In your underwriting automation space, which you guys are involved in, you're in that space, great technology that you have. What do you think they're doing differently?
Well, I'll reiterate what Michael said a few minutes ago, and that some of it is a marketing tactic. I mean, there's caveats, right? In their marketing material, they've got stipulations, got a verified approval letter, which they even got an acronym for. And this was just an article I read that was put out just 3 days ago. They're very clearly pursuing this concept as a sales tactic, and they do have caveats in there. For example, their verified approval letter program doesn't accommodate self-employed borrowers. But the industry in general is definitely moving to a self-service underwriting model. But again, you know, mortgage is not as cut and dry as, say, you know, getting an auto loan and like that. So we're always going to have underwriters.
I think that's a really good point to bring out. A lot of people hear this and they all anticipate, isn't this going to get fairly binary at some point in time where underwriters are not needed? And the answer is clearly no. Underwriters are needed, but it's directing underwriters to the more complicated transactions where Michael was talking about a little bit earlier ago. I think that's such an important part of it.
Well, and it also frees up underwriting resources with sales, right? Finding those gems or finding a program that's more conducive to profitability and things like that, and giving underwriters space to get their DE and that type of thing because they're not spending their time on clerical activity. This is a great time for underwriters, the ones that embrace the new paradigm. Really, to answer your question specifically, the big box lenders, they're leveraging data against rules engines, sophisticated algorithms, calculation models, and that allows lenders to move underwriting towards the point of sale. So let me give you an example. If you use a service like WorkNumber through AUS and get day one certainty, our Lender Toolkit's AI underwriter can generate a doc expiration date using the data coming over through our AAUS integration and generate that condition so the downstream user is aware, things like that. Alternatively, you can couple our AI underwriting with the data generated from Blueprint and then present those to the lender. That's why we're very excited about the technology partnership we have with Blueprint. So I think that's really what they're focused on. And if you think about the industry and the investment in technology, 5 years ago, it was point of sale.
Yeah.
And that was called digital mortgage. Well, point of sale definitely improved the industry, but it didn't solve the most important challenge in the industry, and that's the manufacturing process. Yeah. And that's where everybody's at right now.
Yeah, everyone's focused and they're driving costs down. Michael, when you're speaking of data, income seems to be the keystone data for this particular idea of a verified approval. I can imagine income considerations like calculation of consistency and accurate trending analysis are essential. Can you provide some color for our listeners? What are some lenders doing wrong in this area?
Yeah. As an underwriter, this is not a get rid of underwriting. It's focus them on the loans that need focusing on. We don't need to worry about the guy, the salary with the 32 LTV rate and term refi with an 800 credit score, right? We got to work on the self-employed people. But Jason, you're an underwriter. You know, I spent a couple of years as an auditing manager. As part of your underwriting career, you generally float over to auditing. It's a great teaching tool. When you're looking at two things that every time the underwriter does income analysis, is the data solid and is your calculation method solid? And, you know, if you got fraudulent pay stubs, it doesn't matter how good your calculations are. And if you got great pay stubs, it doesn't matter if you don't know how to do the calculations.
Right.
So that's why Blueprint has taken off like crazy. Some of our customers tell us we have reduced tenfold the number of overall errors in the company because of the four C's, credit, capacity is debt and income, mm-hmm. collateral and cash. It's the capacity that gets us. We don't have trouble with bank statements. Appraisals are getting a lot better. That used to be like the number two. You could argue it was number one. But still to this day, You got a borrower that has a job, a side business doing Uber, couple of rental properties, and spouse works two part-time jobs. You got to do a little work, right? And you got to have sound underwriting practices. You know, that's what our software does. It creates that calculation consistency. So quick story, I got a client down in Florida, great guy. He's on his game, right? Great loan officer. What I loved about him, he was pre-calling somebody over the weekend. He's been a long-time client, so he's got my cell phone. He calls me, hey, I got this problem. And it was somebody that switched jobs or got a promotion or something like that. He did not want to put his approval letter out until he sent it to me. He put it in Blueprint. And he said, how come Blueprint's saying don't use the income? Because we were flagging declining income. It was like 18% down on base pay. That's not normal. You're supposed to make $4,000 a month. Why is it calculating to 3,100? There's a problem. Doesn't mean we can't use it. We need to address it before we go getting that pre-qual letter out there, or that verified approval is the better way to say it. So he told the borrower the weekend, I'm working on it. I don't want to give you this letter with my name on it saying you're good to your realtor when I don't know. We worked it out. We found out they got a pay raise. They were promoted. This is all legit. We got a VOE instead of just a pay sub from the weekend. Looked at it. I gave him some advice. He put it back in the calculator. Boom. We had a trending analysis that, yeah, showed an increased income. We wrote, you know, our narration, right? We gave our explanation, put it in there, and they moved on with a good solid approval. I don't want to broad brush this, but this is where sometimes, and I can say this because I was a loan officer for about 4 years, sometimes the green glasses get you, right? Where you're like, I just want to make sure I get this sale, right? And the problem is if you keep risking that, your aggressiveness to the sale is going to give you a bad reputation. And what we want to do is make sure that we're not sending this borrower a false hope. Because I'll tell you what, after many years in business, and you guys can probably say the same thing, when I go to parties, I can't sell a loan, guys. I'm not a loan officer. I couldn't give you a loan if I wanted to. I really don't even know what the rates are. People are like, what's the rates? I'm like, I don't know. You know, look it up. So, but I hear horror story after horror story. What happened? Oh, yeah, I got this loan. How long did it take you to close? You know, like 3 months. Okay, look, anybody's been in the industry, if it takes you 3 months to close, something went wrong. Okay. More than likely, it was just you weren't pre-qualified properly. You weren't sent a verified approval letter. You got this nice letter. You put an offer down. You told your friends, families, coworkers about this new house, and it didn't go through. Guess what's going to happen? They're going to drag your company's name, because if I'm that person, I'm not saying my credit was bad, my DTI was bad. I'm like, man, that stupid lender, toolkit lender, I have 800 FICO scores. They wouldn't take my income. How ridiculous, man. Don't go to them. They suck. You know, it's like, that's what happens. Our companies get trashed, not even individual loan officers. So we got to just slow down a little bit, make sure we're not sending people on false hope, basically. That's just a passion of mine. It's a nightmare when loans, especially purchase loans, start cascadingly go bad. It just hurts a lot of families.
Yeah, now it hurts families and it hurts our industry. How many borrowers go back to the same lender? Very rare. And it's largely on this point. They had such a bad experience. And a lot of it's just because it wasn't pre-qualified. It's how we start everything. You're a pilot, Michael, and it's that checklist. I mean, you own an airplane. You go into the airplane. You're familiar with that airplane. But what's the thing you pull out, regardless of how many hours you've got in that plane?
Every time start that airplane, it's only like 8 or 9 switches, but you go through it, check the lights, check this. And like I was telling you earlier when we were talking, I'm flying along one day at a couple thousand feet, wondering why the plane's not going as fast as should. Nothing dangerous. It's like, hey, I'm doing 110. I should be doing 140. And I look out the wing and there's my flaps extended. I totally missed the cruise checklist just because I was so enjoying the view, probably because I just love flying. It's easy to do even when you've done it 100, 200 times. I love what you said about the checklist. Like, how many loan officers don't create a checklist of, like, once you got the client to say yes, how do you smoothly let them go through? What technology are you using? What's your emails are supposed to say? What's your touch points? When's your communication? Do they have your cell phone? There's a lot of things even outside of what we're talking about. I feel like they're just shooting from the hip. It's not fun when you're buying a $300,000 or $400,000 property and it feels like the person helping you is shooting from the hip.
It's the most important transaction of anyone's life. That moment, that transaction is the most important one. It's those principles that we can bring to our industry. I'm getting back and getting my private license again. Looking forward to getting back up in the sky. And I've realized the importance of that checklist. My CFI, Certified Flight Instructor, is telling me, David, we're going to go through that checklist. You're going to have it memorized, but you get out of ever using it. Don't ever get that confident. Brent, let's get over to you. I want to make sure that we talk about the transforming of underwriting. Lenders know they must evolve, and it's the right time to do so. But with the market as it is now, there is a lot of fear out there, palatable fear. Listen to the last major mortgage company that just closed its doors. How are you seeing lenders handle these kind of conflicts, Brent?
That's the million-dollar question, David. This is the right time for transformation of your underwriting process. We have a disclosure automation product, which is really terrific. This is a great time to transform that part of your business. You have the space to be able to do that. Again, you know, the market is where it's at. So I would say the interesting thing that I've noticed over the last probably 4 months is the larger the lender, the more inclined they are to make the investment. And I think that tells you something. I think what that tells you is the larger lender is able to look out. They're not just fighting today's fires. They're fighting today's fires. They have those challenges, but they're looking out 2, 3, 4, 5 years and saying, what does my business look like 2 years from now? What does my business look like 5 years from now? What their business looks like, even right at point of sale, in the point of sale system, the borrower can self-serve certain borrower combinations in the POS. You press the button, you get your disclosures immediately, you get your approval immediately, and you can go shop with confidence. And being able to see that vision and understand that there are technology vendors like Lender Toolkit with our AI underwriter and disclosure automation, Blueprint with their income automation, that's possible. We can do these things, and they see that vision and they're executing on that vision and moving forward with us collectively. I think the challenge for the middle tier lenders is taking that leap and saying, with strong leadership, we're going to make these investments in the technology. And it's more than making the investment in the technology. It's really having a very clear vision and communicating that vision to the field. As we all know, oftentimes these solutions start with sales, and rightly so in many respects. Ultimately, we want to drive down the cost of operations, have a more balanced approach there, but really being able to give the loan officer an edge early on with the income analysis and the automated conditioning that AI Underwriter provides allows you to have that immediate lift for the sales field, get them reinvigorated, excited about getting out there and making the realtor calls, and then over time, transforming the entire underwriting workflow so that you are eventually able to press the button and get disclosures and approval at the press of a button. Seeing the vision and then executing on the vision, I think, is really how the successful lenders are navigating these waters.
Yeah, you bring up an important point. It's the cost to originate. We just received the latest data from Q1 of 2022, is that the cost to originate a single loan right now is $10,637,000, up from the previous quarter of $9,470, up from the previous quarter of that to $9,100. I mean, it just continues to keep climbing. Michael, are we really going to see this truly bring out a cost savings, or is this just going to be one of those things where you get some other benefit, but it's really not going to bring the cost savings?
No, that's a great thing. I am not a salesperson by trade. I do most of the sales of the company, but I'm not a salesperson. I'm an underwriter. I'm an ops person. I look at it. If you show my company how I can give you a dollar and you can save me three, I have no reason not to do it, right? You know, obviously, unless it degrades quality or something, but pretty much what you were saying earlier, this is the weird thing, right? So 1997, 98, I'm working at Interfirst, new underwriter. I'm doing A-minus programs. You're old school like me and Dave. You know what A-minus programs are, right? Yep. They're automated with LP, but you got to do a little extra work because they're not the greatest borrowers. I was doing 3-4 a day. This is when people would slap down a file on my desk with the 2-hole punch, and I would look through it with my little thumb thing on and look at pay stubs, make notes on it, flip it down, write my conditions, type them in the computer, send it off, and it would all stay in paper form, right? I was doing 3 or 4 a day. You know what underwriters are doing today? We did a survey last year, their clients, 3 to 4 a day. How is that possible, right? Underwriters like, hey, listen to me. We're not trying to get rid of our job, but here's the stuff you're going to miss. You won't get to look at those flood certs and look for X's all day. You're not going to get to look at your credit report expiration date. You're not going to have to look through for a state disclosure for the 1,000th time. That's all you're missing. Like, these systems do that grunt work, and they let you focus on your risk analysis. I don't want to pay you for math. I want to pay you for risk analysis. Oh, that's weird. We're doing a loan for Mike Whitbeck. He works at Mike's Airplanes, and he says he's not self-employed. Funny, his address and work address are the same location. Weird, right? That's what I want you looking for. Not is 2+ = 4. Hey, if you put 2+ = 5, I'm going to assume you made a mistake, not that you don't know that. So we need to get more efficient. I'm just going to pick on our industry. Underwriters are one of the most expensive ops people there is, right? I mean, by far, underwriters generally make more than closers, processors, managers. They are expensive. Look, underwriters, we got to do better. We got to get through more files without degrading quality. We need to help out. We need to row the boat here, because guess what? When things get slow, we get laid off too. So
That is so interesting. So how are the two of you working together? What's the nature? Brent invited you, Michael, to come on the podcast. There's something exciting about what you two are doing. Talk a little bit about that.
I want to touch on the profitability topic as well, just to kind of stay on that line of discussion. I was recently talking to one of our customers out in Michigan. They do about 1,000 loans a month. And I was talking to them about some of the value they get from having an underwriting automation solution. When you think about having the computer versus a person doing the underwriting on things like the credit report, for example, you're going to get a consistent underwrite every single time because it's being done by the computer. And by the way, David, speaking of man versus computer, we just did a side-by-side comparison for a very large lender down in Texas. And the computer, with very little training, I was shocked by this, was almost perfect on pretty straightforward file. But obviously, it's got to be configured for some of the bond programs and jumbo and things like that. But the point is that the computer, without much training, was almost perfect against the human, which was pretty exciting. And that's across, you know, income, assets, reading AUS, looking at appraisal, FHA, and all of those things. But anyway, getting back to the profitability, the lender I was talking to the CEO, and he said, by having an automated underwriting solution in place and having a standard underwrite, it does it the same way every single time, and we know it's accurate. They were able to move from a 13, 14-day average commitment period to a 3-day commitment period on delivery on the back end. That's real money on the back end. They're saving basis points on the back end because they're using the underwriting solution. So when we're evaluating technology, the emphasis is a lot of times, how is this going to help my salespeople, right? Well, let's look at profitability. How is this going to help the company? And there's a lot of ways we can pick up profitability along the manufacturing line.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring that up because, you know, not only did they save commitment period days, but they were also able to virtually eliminate their post-closing department because, again, the computer is doing the underwrite. In terms of our relationship with Blueprint, we're very excited. We really view Blueprint as best in breed for income analysis and automation. We're doing a deep technology integration with them. We'll be able to take their guidelines, consume those guidelines, and then automatically condition from that. It's going to be a really terrific lights-out solution, and I think the industry is really going to love it.
That is encouraging. Michael, your thoughts on this integration?
Yeah, it's the same exact thing, right? It's about efficiency. Since I live outside of Detroit, I got to use a car analogy because I like how Brent says the manufacturing process. When I train underwriters, I use a 10-point underwriting system. I broke down how to go through a file in 10 uniform steps. And I always teach them, follow these steps. You're going to reduce your error rate. When we're building cars in Detroit, we don't just one day start with the frame, the next day start with the hood. They build a car the same way every time. I mean, I think cars are built in like 6 to 8 hours from scratch to out the door. But this is because they perfected it. They do the things the same way. They analyze it and continually study a better way to do it. But if you're doing it willy-nilly every time, there's no way you can improve. You haven't stared at the process. You don't have a checklist. You don't have any kind of things. So as an ops manager, you know, and Brent addressed the sales side, I'm with him. As an ops manager, my job isn't sit there and put fires all day. My job is to analyze what's happening. How do I put these fires out? How do I stop them from restarting? Mm-hmm. And I used to have underwriting managers work for me. I'm like, you keep coming to the same problem. Why does this keep happening? Well, blah, blah, blah. What's your solution? Instead of just people being mad on my phone about loans all the time and me putting the PC touch on it, how do we stop this from happening? Can we add it to a checklist? Can we put a condition in place? Can we put a second review thing in place? Can we add automation? Every time you do this stuff, you get faster locks. You get less people that you need to touch the file. You get them through quicker. I was a loan officer. If I get a short lock under 30 days, a 15-day lock versus a 30, that saved my customer money. But you were always fearful to do that because 15 days, even in today's world, wow, you can't pull something like that off. That's just where it works. You can't risk that stuff. That's the crazy thing about it.
This is exciting information. How can our listeners learn more? Should they be contacting both of you, Brent, Michael? How does this work? How can people learn more?
The best approach is to send an email to sales@lendertoolkit.com. And then from there, Michael and I will have a joint conversation with the lender and talk through our respective solutions. So that's sales@lendertoolkit.com. We'll reach right out and schedule a time for Michael and I to have a comprehensive conversation. And we're happy to meet with lenders and just talk underwriting and efficiency, profitability, sales, whatever the topic du jour would be.
That sounds good. Michael, we're putting your website in our show show notes here. People can go there. But for those that are listening, want to write it down, what's your website?
It's www.getblueprint.io. GETBLUEPRINT.io. The .io is a tech thing. You know, ones and zeros are on and off on computers. So the tech guys love the .io. Yeah. I kind of want a .com, but you know what? We are a tech environment. It's one of the newer domains. Generally, if you email, that's what messes you up. But yeah, getblueprint.io. And just like Brent said, if you go on there, our contact's on there. But really, I'm going to point you toward Leonard Toolkit, because the unified solution we're building together is probably more what we're talking about here. Now, we have a great solution, obviously. But if you're kind of looking for the overall, I would definitely look at the combined solution versus, I jokingly say, like, I'm an engine builder. If you want a car, I don't sell cars. I build dang good engines. And Leonard Toolkit builds a heck of a good car, but we got our cool engine going inside of it. So we want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, appropriate coming from Detroit. That's perfect, Michael.
Yeah, you got to play with the Detroit market.
Yeah, exactly. So. Right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Great information. I encourage our listeners to reach out. Share this, listeners, with your ops people, the chief operating officer, the head of underwriting. This is the kind of podcast that can make such a difference for you. Are you going to go out with one of those flimsy pre-qualifications? Are you going to go out with a verified approval? I encourage you to do the latter. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Brent, Michael, appreciate you both being here.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, David.
That was a really interesting amount of information given in that podcast. And I encourage, again, everyone listening to this, share this. Tom Hughes said he joined the podcast just to listen, although he listens to the podcast all the time, which I'm grateful for. So anyway, folks, we're going to say thank you for taking time to listen in. Share this podcast with others. We appreciate you very much and hope you have a great rest of your week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, Form Free, Lender Toolkit, SnapDocs, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modix, Mortgage Advisory Tools, and DW Consulting. So much we have in the way of just tremendous sponsors and tremendous products. Check them all out. Go to our website, look at Unlending, and look at the sponsorship page. Appreciate you all. Have a great week and look forward to having you back here next week. By all ways, listen to last week's podcast that Jack and I did together. Also, listen to the other podcast. Just recorded one with David Stevens that you're going to really enjoy listening to. We also released last week one with Ron Weinberg. Lots of content going up on our website. Encourage you to listen to it. And be sure to listen to it on iTunes if you have an iPhone. And then search it elsewhere. We'll be up on the Google Play Store very soon. But we're also, if you Google Lick It On Lending, you'll find us all over many, many, many of the podcast platforms out there. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.